It's At the Letters for Thursday, February 15th, 2024. Arden Zwelling with Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. Thanks to them for their work. Thanks to you for listening. Ben, as I look out my window here in Toronto, it is rather snowy, but in Dunedin, Florida, it is anything but. It is warm. It is sunny. Pitchers and catchers have reported the snap of the mitt, the crack of the bat. All those things that happen around this time of year are happening in Dunedin. Spring training is underway.
Yeah, it's great. Really excited to get down there in a couple weeks. As I look outside and see that same blizzard here in Toronto, of course, Shy Davidi and Hazel May down there right now. But yeah, spring training is long. Really excited to get down there and cover some of it off with respect to the Jays, and really lots to discuss with this team here.
All right, well then let's get after it. Like, what are some of the bigger things that you're going to be keeping an eye on over the next several weeks as the Blue Jays ramp up for the season?
I'll start with an obvious one. I'll start with Alek Manoah. I think, you know, you look at where he was last year. This is a guy who has not spoken to the media in 6 months. We have not heard from him. We have not seen him pitch in 6 months. We saw him off a mound throwing a side session Thursday when camp opened in Dunedin. But essentially, we haven't seen him in any kind of game action for half a year. So that, to me, like, it's hard to come up with really a bigger storyline than that and a bigger possible, you know, upgrade to the Blue Jays compared to the second half of last year to where he potentially could be in 2024.
Yeah, I tend to think that with some of the public comments, like, I think it'll probably be pretty banal. You know, I don't think that he's going to air anybody out. I don't think that he's going to be too revealing. I think that he's going to say all the things that we're all expecting him to say. You know, hey, last year didn't go my way. I got punched in the mouth. Not the first time. Life has knocked me down. I'm going to come back stronger this year and better than ever. I carried my frustrations from last year into the offseason, put in a whole bunch of work, ready to go out and prove everybody wrong. So, like, I'm not expecting too much from that side of it. I am certainly, like, interested to see how he looks on the mound and just how his stuff looks in spring. And, like, usually I am somebody who would sort of nudge people away from paying too much attention to results, certainly, but even beyond that, like, things like velocity can be a little bit misleading sometimes in spring because it's not the same atmosphere, it's not the same environment as a big league game played at Rogers Center or Yankee Stadium or Fenway Park when things count and things matter. And pitchers work on things during spring and they go into their outings saying, I'm just trying to build up, I'm just trying to feel a certain way on the mound, just trying to get a certain rhythm. So you want to be really careful with the results and even some of the measurables sometimes in spring. But I will be paying attention to the velocity when it comes to Alek Manoah during his first several spring starts. I will be paying attention to the horizontal break on his slider. And I will be looking to see if that slider is more like a 14, 15 inches of horizontal break versus the 11, 12 that it was last year. And I am going to be paying attention as well just to his body language on the mound, his confidence, his rhythm, his tempo, just how he looks walking around the mound, even in between batters, in between pitches. I do think that some of those things will be important to assess this spring for Alek Manoah.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, I think you look at last year, for example, and spring training 2023. Okay, who were we dialed in on? It was guys like Yusei Kikuchi who had something to prove. And I think if you're someone like a Kevin Gausman who consistently year after year has good results at the major league level, you just kind of give those guys a free pass. And Chris Bassitt has earned that. Jose Berríos this year, I would say, has earned that. And even Kikuchi has. But last year, we were dialed in on Berríos when he was hit hard in the WBC because he was coming off a tough year. Same with Kikuchi. So I think it's only natural, and it's not just those of us in the media, but you talk to scouts around the team or coaches around the team. People are watching more closely when a player has something to prove. And of anyone on the Blue Jays this year, I'd say it's Alek Manoah who probably has the most to prove, maybe along with Vlad Guerrero Jr., maybe some of the younger players on this team as well. But from the heights that he reached to where he ended up in 2023, there's a ton at stake here for Manoah. And so completely agree that you are going to be more dialed in to watching pitch to pitch and the body language, all that stuff.
One and two on Casas, but not anymore. Manoah strikes him out. and retires the Red Sox in order in the bottom of the
seventh. You mentioned the tempo and the rhythm on the mound. I think that's going to be really important because from a delivery standpoint, the Blue Jays don't want him to be someone who's really stiff and vertical out there. You want to see some fluidity and tempo to that delivery as he's attacking hitters inning after inning. And so it'll take a while before we get an accurate read there, but those are some of the things that I think really matter when it comes to Manoah.
Yeah, slider movement is huge. How he's using that pitch, how he's landing it, how confident he is in that pitch. I mean, Alek Manoah, a guy who can wear his heart on his sleeve on the mound, is one of the reasons why we love watching him pitch and why he's Stroman-esque. You know, it's just really cool to see a guy, you know, who can really show his emotions like that on the mound. This is not you know, your kind of robotic Gerrit Cole type, right? This is somebody who, you know, is pretty expressive when he's pitching. So it's going to be interesting just to watch the progression of that this spring. You know, you kind of mentioned it, it's hard to set expectations with him because you can't go from more disparate poles of 2 years ago being a Cy Young finalist and then last year being one of the, if not the least effective starters at the big league level. I mean, you can on the Savant page, all of the numbers from 2022 go from bright red to dark blue in 2023. We are just talking about such polarizing seasons. So it's hard to even kind of wrap your head around where expectations should be. I'm not sure I even have the answer to that question, but what do you think is a fair expectation for Blue Jays fans when they look to what Alek Manoah can be for this club in 2024?
You know, when it comes to the day-to-day performance, I'm thinking if he can be a guy who goes 5 1/3, 5 2/3, he allows 2 or 3 runs, I think you're really happy with that, as you would be for 95% of major league pitchers. I mean, that's really, really good. And we know he can be at that level. I know it doesn't necessarily sound that good when you say 5 1/3 innings, 3 earned runs, but man, you add that up over the course of a season, that's really valuable. And, you know, you and I know this from covering the Clay Buchholz and the Edwin Jackson and some of the Trent Thornton, some of the starters who struggled on some of the teams that were a lot worse than the current version of the Blue Jays. It can be hard to find even somewhat dependable major league starting pitching. And so if he can be in that level, great. I do not expect that he's going to go out there and pitch 7 innings, 2 earned runs every night. But I think in the course of the season, we're probably talking about a guy who can have an ERA around 4 and who certainly is showing that he can haul innings, a big, strong guy. If he can recover from some of the health stuff, which was bothering him legitimately at the end of last season, then I think, is he 150 innings of a 4 ERA? That to me would be, I think if you can snap your fingers right now and take and get that, you would take that.
Here's a question for you. Do you think that Alek Manoah is competing for a spot in the Blue Jays rotation in this camp? Or do you think that he is this club's number 5 starter on opening day until we have a very profound reason to believe otherwise?
That's a good way to frame it. And I think you kind of answered the question in that framing. I think it's his job to lose. End of the day, if Mitch White goes in there and pitches 30 innings with 45 strikeouts and 1 walk, maybe Mitch White earns the spot. But it's going to have to be dominant. Bowden Francis probably makes this team in some capacity, but I think he's behind Manoah. Yuriel Rodriguez, I mean, if Rodriguez comes in and he's just dominant, then maybe. But I think Manoah is clearly established as the front runner for this spot.
It's so interesting because if you had asked me in August, September last year, who's, you know, the number 6, this is when Ryu was back, it was the number 5, who's the number 6 on this club, it was Bowden Francis for me.
Yep.
On merit, you know, on form, on the fact that he was confident on the mound and his velocity was mid-90s and he was landing a breaking ball and he was throwing strikes and he wasn't backing down from anybody. He had control and command of his pitches, rhythm, tempo, all these little, you know, nuances that we're referring to. I mean, Bowden Francis was checking all of those boxes and Alek Manoah wasn't. So I think that even in a world over the, you know, in the last 2 months of 2023 in which both Francis and Manoah are healthy and, you know, active on the Blue Jays roster, I think Francis gets the start in a must-win game before Manoah does. So it does kind of make you question, like, okay, what has changed over the offseason? Like, is this really fair to a Bowden Francis for him to now have to take a back seat behind Manoah when he really pitched better than him all last year?
It's a fair question. I do think it's fair. I do think when you look at a guy who has been a Cy Young finalist in the major leagues, look, if he's not actively throwing the way Manoah had stepped away, you know, again, he did get an injection in his shoulder. There were health concerns there. So he stepped away for a reason, but he was not throwing. He was not toward the end of the season. He was shut down. So at that point, clearly, you know, he's lost the right to be in that discussion. And at that point, you're going to go to someone who's pitching in that moment. But if Manoah is physically right, and the indications are that he has worked out really hard this offseason, he's in better shape, he's in a better headspace, and ready to produce and perform, then given what he has accomplished in the major leagues, I actually think it's totally fine for him to be ahead of Bowden Francis and Mitch White. But it has to be a meritocracy, ultimately.
Yeah, and I'm not sure you are running a meritocracy if, like, Bowden Francis isn't being given a legitimate chance of winning the number five spot in this rotation to begin the season.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I do think Manoah is the front runner, but I think he could lose this job. Like, if he comes out and he's sitting 90-91 and the slider doesn't have the bite and Francis just keeps trucking along and doing what he's done, then look, Manoah has options. And I don't think the way last year ended, if he does not come out here and have a good spring, I don't think that Manoah should be entitled to breaking camp with this team. And so from that standpoint, I do think there has to be an element of who performs the best, because this Jays team, you know, they're not a 105 win juggernaut. They need every win they can get, and that means coming out of the gate strong.
And a very tough schedule to begin the season as well. I mean, no joke opponents in April, and you open up on a 10-game road trip. I mean, you open in Tampa, you're going to the Bronx on that road trip, you're going to Houston, some very tough opponents. So I think you want to field, like, your best possible side from the jump and try to bank as many wins as possible early in the season. You mentioned the health aspect with Manoah, and that would be, like, my biggest thing that I look for, especially early in spring training, not just as it pertains to Manoah, but as it pertains to everybody on the Blue Jays, is health. Who's healthy? Who picked up something over the offseason that we're just going to learn about now? Who might pick up something as they start ramping up workload again? Like, this is the time of year when you start to see all kinds of injuries, like, crop up across MLB, because particularly with pitchers, like, they're starting to throw at high intensity again after a very long layoff. They're starting to stress their shoulders and their elbows and their tendons and their ligaments for the first time in a while. And it doesn't take much for, you know, something bad to happen there if you don't progress really deliberately and really intelligently. So, like, over the next week, you're going to hear all kinds of so-and-so is experiencing soreness, so-and-so has inflammation, tightness, discomfort, so-and-so is being backed off. You see it often in players who carried pretty substantial workloads the season prior. Like, Manoah comes to mind. Remember how many innings he threw in 2022? And then he comes back in 2023 and doesn't look like the same guy. And I do think that, you know, workload was, and the offseason that Manoah had following that was likely part of what he went through last year. You mentioned Mitch White. You saw the same thing. He set a career high in innings pitched in 2022. He battles, ends up battling a shoulder issue throughout the offseason. It sets him back. He's battling it again in spring training. He's getting injections. He's being set back. And it just submarines his entire season. Dude ends up getting DFA'd halfway through. So, you know, I will be keeping an eye on that, particularly when you look at Blue Jays relievers who carried very substantial workloads last year and set career highs in innings pitched. It's just going to be interesting to see how these guys build up and what kind of, you know, what kind of health things could arise over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, we've already seen that with Justin Verlander and others. For the Jays, they're obviously hopeful that they can avoid that. End of the day, you are going to need probably all those guys to start games for you in 2024 at some point. So we say this every year, but it's true this year as well, that maybe it's a Bowden Francis making 10 starts. Maybe it's Ariel Rodriguez making 8 or 10 starts. We'll see. Maybe Mitch White makes starts. Ricky Tiedemann as well. I mean, he's a guy who's did not pitch a lot in 2023 from an inning standpoint. But if he can come out in spring and consistently throw strikes, then, I mean, he's gonna start in Buffalo. But if he can come out in spring and consistently throw strikes and with the kind of velo and the stuff that he has, then that can make an impression on Blue Jays decision makers to the point that 5-6 weeks into the season, it wouldn't be surprising if Ricky Tiedemann is on the major league team.
Position player timeout. Called strike three. Good slider over the inside corner as Tiedemann picks up his first strikeout looking and his third punch out of the game.
Yeah, I don't think the Blue Jays are going to use 6 starters again. I know they used 8, but 2 of them were Trevor Richards and Wes Parsons. So really, the Blue Jays used 6 starters last year. It's just very, very hard to believe that's going to be the case again. So yeah, the Blue Jays are going to have to tap into that depth of Francis's and Rodriguez's and Tiedemann's. And I mean, who knows who else, right? Like maybe we see a Chad Dallas at the big league level for a stage at some point, or a CJ Van Eyck.
Parsons, yeah.
Yeah, right. Like these things are going to happen. It's going to be in the bullpen too, right? Like Blue Jays bullpen, like pretty healthy last year, all things considered. That's how you end up with guys like Jimmy Garcia and Tim Mason, Eric Swanson, all setting career highs in innings pitched. You know, we saw like how heavily this club relied on a guy like Swanson last year. So, you know, those are guys who are going to have to be like very deliberate about how they build up in spring. Wouldn't be surprised to see the Blue Jays be cautious with guys who are coming off of like career high workloads. Cause like, look, you can ask Chad Green how this goes, right? He throws a career high 83 2/3 innings in 2021, has Tommy John surgery in 2022. So, you know, that's going to be something to keep an eye on. And then, yeah, you mentioned Yariel Rodriguez a couple of times, just what kind of role he's in spring, how the Blue Jays progress him coming off of a year when he didn't pitch competitively at all. We got to learn a bit about his contract escalators this week, which I think tells you something about what the Blue Jays are expecting from him in 2024. Like his escalators in 2024 are for innings pitch totals in like the 60, 70, 80 range. Whereas in 25, 26, 27, later on in the contract, those escalators are like 120, 130, 140 innings pitched. So it kind of tells you the Blue Jays are expecting more length out of him later on in this deal. But as far as just the first year, 2024, it seems like the Blue Jays are looking at somebody who's going to have more of a bullpen role, perhaps a hybrid role, a length relief role, maybe a spot start here and there. But it doesn't seem like it's somebody who they are going to be like relying on to be a 5-inning starter for them.
Yeah, it sounds like he will be stretched out at least to get a sense of what he can do and what he looks like and see if he can offer them some of that bulk. But yeah, that's really interesting with those escalators. I didn't realize that until you mentioned that. But that is very telling and probably indicates that, you know, this might be more of a, hey, let's reset after you didn't pitch professionally at all in 2023. And then build up toward potentially a greater amount of innings for 2025 and beyond. But yeah, really, you know, this is a pretty big arm. And so whatever role he's in, watching him against major league hitters in spring training is going to be really interesting just to see what kind of swings he gets, what the catchers are saying about him. I presume he might work with Kirk to start, but I'm sure he'll work with Jansen as well. To see what John Schneider and Pete Walker think. It's going to be interesting because, you know, you would think, and he can be optioned too, right? This year, he can be optioned without his permission. So there's a chance he would start in the minor leagues, but would expect that he plays a big role in this pitching staff.
Yeah, I'd expect the Blue Jays to take advantage of that option this year because they do have it. And, you know, clearly it's something that he's agreed to in his contract. This is not something that the Blue Jays had with Shun Yamaguchi when he came over from Japan. Like they could not option him without his consent. And that became a bit of a problem as Shun Yamaguchi struggled to make the transition to MLB. Remember, like with Rodriguez, yep, big time stuff, like projectable dude. Like you can see, you know, what the Blue Jays are seeing in terms of thinking that they can develop him into more than what he's been to this point. But we're still talking about somebody who has not pitched at the MLB level. So I think that you can expect there to be a bit of a transition process. Like, you can expect there to be a bit of acclimation that's going to have to happen. I mean, it's just, it's a new environment. It's a new continent. It's a new level of competition that he hasn't faced before. It's a different style of baseball. I mean, you know how contact oriented NPB can be. MLB, obviously a lot more power oriented, so that kind of changes the way that you approach certain hitters and the areas of the zone that you work in and how often you double up on certain pitches to, you know, in certain attack plans and the sequences that you use. I think you can expect there to be some growing pains, certainly, as he gets acclimated to this level. And so maybe the Blue Jays end up using that option if they kind of need to take a second to reset with Rodriguez at any point this year.
Yeah. Anything else on the pitching side, or are there position players that that are going to be on your radar as spring begins here?
I mean, my final one here, and it's broad again, but it's just which developmental players are ready to take a jump? Like, who could be impacting this club this year? Because you look at the depth that the Blue Jays have, or lack, if you want to put it that way, and it looks like the Blue Jays are going to need somebody to have their own Babe Schneider arc this year. And I don't know if that's going to be Aurelvis Martinez. I don't know if that's going to be Alan Rodin or Damiano Palmagiani or Addison Barger or somebody else who we aren't even talking about. Because if you flash back a year, none of us were talking about Davis Schneider. I don't even think he was in big league camp last year.
No, he wasn't. Right? He had a few games in big league camp, but he wasn't part of camp.
Yeah, none of us were even talking about him. So there could be somebody within the system who's not even in big league camp right now who's going to end up being this year's Babe Schneider.
And a high fly ball to left. Do you believe it? Davis Schneider with a home run off Aroldis Chapman.
One thing that I believe is that someone's going to have to, because someone's going to get hurt, someone else is going to underperform, and the Blue Jays are just going to need someone from within, internally, to step up, because they haven't had enough good stories coming out of their system over the last couple of years. Like, obviously, you graduate the talent in a Kirk and a Guerrero and a Bichette, Jansen before them, Romano before them, Biggio, but there hasn't been like another wave coming behind. Like, there hasn't been a lot of supplementary talent coming from behind them who are able to step up and be just like capable everyday big leaguers. Maybe Davis Schneider can be that. We'll see. The Blue Jays are just going to need more help internally this year, especially if they're going to be successful.
Yeah, it's so important. And, you know, the Jays themselves have said this. They understand the importance of it internally. They've talked about player development a lot. But as you said, the last few years, there haven't been those same level of graduations, that same level of impact, especially on the position player side, reaching the major leagues. And you look at the best teams in baseball, teams like the Dodgers or the Orioles, they have waves of talent. Like, Baltimore might have Coby Mayo and Jackson Holliday come up this year and be, you know, along with Kjerstad, along with Westberg and of course Rutschman and Henderson. It's just incredible amounts of young talent. Of course, they've had more picks, but you do have teams like the Dodgers that still find a way to do this, even though they're not picking at the top of the draft, or the Yankees or the Rays. There are teams in their division that in the prospect rankings that have come out across Major League Baseball are well ahead of the Blue Jays on this. So that has not been a strength, to get to this point where you're 20th, 25th in Major League Baseball in prospect rankings is not what the Blue Jays would have wanted. This is not where they would have wanted to be. Now, look, internally, if guys can surpass expectations, maybe those rankings will prove to be wrong. And as you say, there's some promising players in this organization that it'll be really interesting to watch and see what a guy like an Alan Rodin can do, or maybe an Aurelvis Martinez. And it's not that they don't have some good prospects, because they do, but that overall system by the publicly available rankings is not at that level of some of the other teams.
And that's how you sustain success, and you don't have those like valleys where you spend two or three seasons like in the wilderness, you know, winning 78 to 82 games, right? Like, that's how you are the Astros and the Dodgers, and you are perennially in the postseason while letting like really talented players exit. your organization. That's how, you know, the Astros can let a George Springer and a Carlos Correa walk and still go back to the ALCS. Like, that's how the Dodgers can let a, you know, a Corey Seager and a Manny Machado just depart and continue to, you know, return to the playoffs. And obviously haven't had success there, but I mean, the Dodgers to me have been the best team in baseball for like the last decade. Just look at the run of success that they've had. I know it's only one championship, but I mean, you just can't convince me otherwise that the Dodgers haven't been the best club of the last decade in MLB. So
it's like Atlanta in the 90s, right? Like Atlanta in the 90s was a force, but you know, they only won once.
And the Dodgers, the Astros, they're able to do that because they continually develop talent from within. And these are not clubs that are picking at the top of the draft. This is, you know, these are clubs who are taking players in the third, fourth, fifth round with interesting tools or abilities or traits that they have like identified as undervalued across the industry. And they go and they select these players and they bring them into their developmental system and they work with them and they help them get the most out of their those tools and add to other parts of their game to the point where they can be guys with like over 100 WRC pluses in the big leagues. Like, that's just what you need. You need that supplemental talent coming up through your system developmentally, and you need to be able to identify it, you know, in the domestic amateur market and also internationally, and then acquire it and help those players get the most out of it. So I think that's something that the Blue Jays are, they're going to need to see some more results from their developmental system this year. If, you know, not only if they're going to win in 2024, but if they're going to sort of lay the foundation of continuing to win through 25, 26, 27, 28, as players like Guerrero, Bichette, Romano, Biggio, Jansen, etc., get to like the end of their controllability on the club side, and as ultimately some of them likely end up leaving the organization and playing elsewhere.
For sure, for sure. And I think like this is where you kind of have to have one or the other, right? And so if the Blue Jays aren't going to go out and you're not going to spend on Cody Bellinger, okay, let's assume that in this example Cody Bellinger signs with the Cubs, all right, you're not going to have that big splashy offseason signing, then you do need someone internally to step up. Then you do need to be sure that you have that organizational talent that is going to be able to backfill when someone goes down, and you need to have somebody come up and hit major league pitching for a week or two. So, you know, some teams maybe paper over this stuff by spending. The Blue Jays didn't spend a lot, haven't spent a lot so far this offseason. They weren't. The most aggressive out there on the free agent market. So it really amplifies the pressure on what they're going to get from that internal group.
They've kind of already done their spending, you know, like in prior off seasons. Like the Blue Jays are going to run a franchise record payroll this right. year. They've never spent more money. They're going to be a luxury tax team for a second consecutive year. They're going to be top five, top six, top seven across baseball, just can, you know, depending on how things shake out once some of the, you know, Snells and Montgomerys and Bellingers and Chapmans come off the board. Like, this is a team that has George Springer making like $24 million, Kevin Gausman, 22, Chris Bassett, 22, Jose Berrios, close to 18. Like, there are a lot of big ticket players on this club. Like, it really does reinforce that the Blue Jays are like built to win now, need to win now in 2024.
Yeah, exactly. And I think too, like, that kind of adds to the intrigue as far as how they round out this offseason, if at all, because there may be, we talked last week about the San Francisco Giants who ended up acquiring Otto Lopez. Like, maybe, you know, you would suggest that Espinal, like the Lopez thing might actually be like an Espinal light. I don't know if that blocks them off from Espinal. In theory, they could still acquire an Espinal, and Slater and JD Davis do make some sense in my mind for this Blue Jays team. So I'll be interested to see if there is any traction on trade talks along those lines.
Any final things you'll be keeping an eye on this spring before we take the break?
I think those are the big ones.
Those are the big ones. Let's step away. When we continue, we will talk internal improvement from the Blue Jays. We'll talk about maybe some common misconceptions that you tend to see around spring training, all that and so much more when we continue on At the Letters.
Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade, thinking about what the topics are going to be over the next several weeks. Ben, what are the things that we're going to get sick of talking about between now and opening day? And I feel like one of them is already internal improvement and the bet that the Blue Jays are making on it, whether anybody should be buying or selling, whether many of the same offensive pieces that contributed to last year's underwhelming offense can in fact be better in 2024 without like really impactful acquisitions from outside the organization. So let me let you get sick of it, Ben. Let me put it to you. You buying or selling the internal improvement of the Blue Jays offense?
I buy that it's an important topic. I buy that it's necessary that it happens for the Blue Jays to have a successful year. Will it happen? I don't know. I really don't. I'll be really interested to watch guys like Vlad Guerrero Jr. in particular and see what he looks like this spring, because I think that can give us a little bit of a line as to what to expect from him in 2024.
Hitting his 20th. And Vladdy has gotten the Blue Jays out of that group right here. A no-doubter into the second deck in left, number 20.
Are you buying it?
I don't know. Like, I'm the same way. Like, I can't predict the future. I have no idea, you know? Like, I can look to the projection systems, and I can see that someone like Vlad, who you mentioned, is projected by Steamer to have, like, a WRC plus 27 points higher in 24 than it was in 23. You know, Zips projecting him for, like, a 20-point increase in OPS plus. Similar increases projected for guys like Alejandro Kirk and Dalton Varsho. Both those players projected to have like 20 plus point increases in their WRC plus year over year. Even George Springer, who, like, we'll see how much of 2023 was decline, how much of it was blip. Like, he's obviously at a different stage in his career than Guerrero, Kirk, and Varsho, but even he is like projected for a double digit increase in WRC plus. So, like, I lean on the objective data like that at this time of year, because, like, I've just seen enough baseball to know that, like, I have no idea what's actually going to happen, and I just am trying to like weed out any kind of like emotional residue of what I saw in 23 and even before that, right, what we saw from Vlad in 21. Like, you try to just like take all of that out of the equation and just look at these players based on their talents and their merits and what you can objectively expect going forward, but it can often be hard to forget what we have just seen in the recent and distant past.
Yeah, and of course, you look at the projections. I love the human side of it too, where, you know, we get to know these guys a little bit as people. We watch them closely, as many of our listeners do, as many fans do. We even have a little extra layer of access when it comes to talking to them, seeing how they work behind the scenes, talking to people who are close to them, putting that picture together, and then trying to do, you know, this is the most amateur of amateur scouting, but trying to watch them. I really enjoy watching in person Vlad Guerrero Jr. take BP and watching Vlad Guerrero Jr. take at-bats in a spring game. And, you know, this has been, we've covered Vlad Jr. his entire career. So this goes back to his first major league spring training was, I don't know, 2018 or 2019, 2017. I don't know. It was a while ago. We've been watching this guy like up close with binoculars in my case for a long time. And it's just fun for me to watch his swing and see. You know, again, I am not a hitting scout by any stretch, but just to look at it with the eye test and see how is he moving? How does it look? How is the ball coming off his bat? And, you know, putting that together with the objective data and the conversations that you have and trying to get a sense of where it leads and understanding all the fallibility in that. And of course, like, I am no better than the Zips projection sheet. You might as well just shortcut to the 144 that Zips has for him or whatever the case. But it's fun this time of year to try to get those little hints and put it together into a bigger picture.
Well, and we get to talk to the game planners as well in terms of like the Blue Jays hitting staff, their coaches, John Schneider on a daily basis, obviously. And like, that's where the Blue Jays have made a lot of their adjustments on, you know, the offensive side of the ball. And it's not something that's going to be super apparent to fans. Like, it's not something you're going to see on a nightly basis like you would see a Cody Bellinger coming to the plate every night. Like, that is a very apparent thing right in front of your face. What you don't see is like, you know, Don Mattingly pouring over scouting reports or the hitters meeting with Matt Hague and Hunter Mentz, you know, pointing that video on a projector of a pitcher's delivery. Hey, here's a possible tip or a tell. Hey, here's how this guy likes to approach two strike situations. Hey, Vlad, like, you're this style of hitter, and here's how this pitcher has approached that style of hitter, you know, in the recent past. Like, that's where a lot of just the alterations for the Blue Jays offensively have come, has just been in like those processes, their workflows, the day-to-day game planning and strategizing and providing players with information and just helping get them as prepared as possible to be successful. You know, there are people who were on this staff last year who are no longer on it, and there are reasons for that. And Don Mattingly is going to be the offensive coordinator of this team, so a lot of that is going to fall at his feet. It's going to be hard to kind of measure the success or failure of that game planning, because like, if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. goes out and gets like a hanging cookie and smokes into the 200 level, well, was that game planning, or was that Vlad being an amazing hitter and a pitcher left a pitch in a really bad spot and he smoked it, right? Like, it can be hard to kind of comb through the context of all this, but that is just the area the Blue Jays have identified as where they can really make some gains offensively. And it's going to be interesting just to see behind the scenes how it plays out.
Yeah. And even just watching, because that will take time to really get a read on how well that's playing out. And a lot of that is interpersonal stuff and how many people are on the bench. Do the players have enough space? All these things factor into how the Blue Jays sort of restructured their coaching dynamic in the off season. But when it comes to the granular moment by moment stuff that we get to observe in spring training, I'll be watching even Vladdy's takes, you know, and this is always really interesting with some of the more expressive hitters out there. And Vladdy's a guy who can react sometimes at the plate. And you can tell if he's really confident, if he's moving around, dancing in the Juan Soto, right-handed Juan Soto style, then you can get a sense from Vladdy that, hey, he's really dialed in. Or sometimes he'll be off balance and you can tell that he started to offer it a slider off the plate and he did take it, but he wasn't really seeing that pitch the whole way. So, you know, those are the little indications that that I'll be watching for. And of course, too, like being down there, having the chance to talk to our colleagues like Joe Siddle and Caleb Joseph, guys who have stood in there in the box against major league pitching and you know, have insight to what it means to face the best in the world. That is the difference between, you know, February and January is you actually get some real information and real conversations going.
Yeah, and then they're gonna have to go out there and they're gonna have to do it. Like, they're gonna have to go out there and score a bunch of runs. And I think that the big thing for the Blue Jays offense that I'll just be keeping an eye on this year and tracking throughout the year isn't necessarily how they do against the better pitchers in baseball. Like, you're going to come up against the Garrett Coles of this world and the Luis Castillos of this world, the George Kirby's of this world, and those guys are going to shove against you. Like, that's what they do. That's why they're Cy Young candidates. That's why they're the best pitchers in baseball. But I think that what we need to see more of from the Blue Jays offense in 2024 is doing a better job of executing against the gettable pitchers, which you see routinely throughout the course of the season, because like, not everyone is a Logan Gilbert. Like, not everybody is a Garrett Cole. Like, you do come up against your Lance Lynn's, you do come up against your Kyle Gibson's or your Dean Kramer's, right?
Your, like, Michael, how many Kopechs,
right? Like, how many times last year, Ben, did you see like Kyle Gibson carve the Jays or Dean Kramer, who would like, you know, routinely get like boat raced by Seattle or, you know, like, you know, Minnesota, and then come to Rogers Center and go like seven innings of one run ball? Like, that, those are the guys that the Blue Jays
offense. Jordan Lyles, career game.
Sure. Yeah. Those are the guys that the Blue Jays offense really needs to capitalize against. And I think just do a better job of like executing some of those strategic things, some of those game planning things, some of those preparation items. They need to do a better job of executing on those against like that class of pitcher this year if the offense is going to be more successful.
How funny would it be if the Blue Jays have like this monster offensive season? They score like 850 runs, but the pitching takes a step back and everyone's like, what happened? But I mean, who knows? Yeah, it's going to be interesting on the offensive side.
If you look at the objective projection systems, and I agree with you, like the Blue Jays could use another bat. They could use some more offense added to their lineup. Who knows? Like maybe something will happen. There's still a lot of talent like available in the free agent market if the Blue Jays choose to seek it. But you look at Pakoda, they have the Blue Jays finishing the season in the American League's top wildcard spot. Zips has the Blue Jays and Yankees tied for that top wildcard spot. Fangraphs depth charts, which blends Zips with Steamer and makes some playing time estimations, like they project the Blue Jays for the same amount of war as they accumulated last season. Like they project the Blue Jays for the American League's fourth highest war total this year. So like these are just completely objective projection systems that like have no emotion, no skin in the game whatsoever. They just value players, assign a number to that and add up the numbers. They all think that like the Blue Jays is presently constructed ought to be better offensively this year, ought to see better results and outcomes, ought to not have a similar year to last year where they had like a top six, top seven weighted runs created plus, but like a below average run scored. Projection systems believe in what the Blue Jays themselves are telling you that they believe via their actions this offseason, that internally they will improve.
Yeah. And that's the wild thing about it, right? Because of course, like the experience of following the Toronto Blue Jays for the last, whether you want to dial it back to 6 months or even longer, there's been a lot of frustration there. And like that is real frustration that Jays fans have had to navigate and face. And there hasn't been a silver lining. And anyone who's frustrated, again, it's so understandable. But then the projection systems don't care about that. They don't need to take that into account. They just look at the talent that is on the roster and they make their best guess based on that. And so, this should be a competitive team. I think that there is no reason to believe, like I think the Orioles and Yankees, the more I've looked at the depth charts for those teams, although I think Bradish had an injury, right? He's going to start the season on the injured list.
I think there's a UCL issue there.
Yes.
And it seems like he's going to try to, treat it conservatively and pitch through it, which always goes so well when pitchers try to do that.
So maybe that actually takes Baltimore down. But Baltimore, the Yankees, the Rays, it's going to be really competitive. I certainly wouldn't place the Blue Jays at the top of this division. There's no way I'm going to pick them to win the AL East this year. But they're going to compete for a playoff spot. So, where that leads, we don't know. But I think it's a good point to at least acknowledge these objective projection systems like the Blue Jays.
I think ultimately, like a lot of the Blue Jays offseason moves are just going to end up sort of lateral. Like they might be slight downgrades. They might be slight upgrades. I think mostly it's just going to be lateral stuff around the margins, and that like what's going to drive the Blue Jays is what always drives every team, and that's their best hitters who make the most plate appearances. So that's Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, and George Springer. Like as those three go, the Blue Jays will go. Everything else is just kind of distracting us and just sort of window dressing. But if I had to sit here right now and make a prediction of like how many games the Blue Jays are gonna win this year with the roster is presently constructed, like I would, baseball's so crazy and so many wacky things happen over a 6 month span. Like I wouldn't put even a single number on it. Like just the way my brain works, I kind of look at it in like bands, right? So I think that there's like a win band for the Blue Jays that could go as low as say 85 or 86 in a really bad case scenario where you get injuries and underperformance and poor luck in one run games. And all of a sudden it's like, oh geez, we only won 85 times. And like, we're not even in the postseason. I could see a really good case scenario where it's like everyone stays healthy and Alek Manoah is fixed and you get the good outcome, you know, projections for guys who had down years like Vlad and Varsho and Kirk, and you win like 94 to 95 games. Like, I think that either of those outcomes are entirely possible, just depending on like how luck, how fortune, how things like the craziness, the crazy whims of fate of baseball sway. I think most likely the Blue Jays fall somewhere in the middle of that band, so in like the 88 to 90 win range. But I do think there are potential outcomes where they win as few as 85 or as many as 95 in worst or best case scenarios.
Yeah, I think that's all pretty reasonable. I think that, you know, I could even see like low-ish 80s, like an 83. I could even see like high-ish 90s, like a 96, you know? But essentially, I agree. I think that's essentially like, yeah, this is a team that's probably hovering around that 89-90 range on paper, maybe 88 to 90 on paper, with just the normal volatility that you see in the course of a season. And this is where you have one or two things go right. Like, let's say it's David Schneider hits 25 bombs and Ricky Tiedemann makes 15 starts, then that really nudges things ahead. But if it's Kevin Gausman misses 3 months with a hamstring and Jordan Romano, you know, ends up with an oblique for half the season, then that pushes it in the other direction. So, you know, more likely it's you kind of get one of each, and it's kind of where we have it, somewhere in that middle. But there's so much room for, you know, I guess, interpretation or surprise within that.
Most likely outcome, I think that by the end of September, yeah, the Blue Jays are flirting with 90 wins and they're playing a 2-game wildcard series.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Put a gun to my head and I had to bet on something, that's honestly what I would bet on.
I don't watch a lot of basketball, but this sort of reminds me of like a basketball game between two sort of even teams where it's like, you know, the first quarter, like one team's up 10 points and then you start the second half. It's like, oh man. But end of the day, it's like the last 6 minutes kind of determine what happens.
Yeah, who has the ball last?
Yeah,
what pretty this is much. Coming down to.
There's the only basketball analogy I've probably ever made on ATL.
Last thing I want to touch on this week is just like some sort of common spring training misconceptions. Like, this is just a good time of year to do it. You know, I'm curious if you have any, but I'll kick it off. And this is just like a very personal one for me, and I think you can relate as well, because you and I are usually the guys there on like that last week of spring training, you know, doing TV hits, writing for the website. All the stories have been told, or down to just like those final storylines of camp. And it's always, what are they going to do with the out of options guy?
Yeah.
Who's going to be the 26th man on the roster? Let's not do that this year. Because like, I've been through what are they going to do with the out of options guy with Dalton Pompey, with Anthony Alford, with Thomas Hatch. I did it last year with Mitch White, and we're going to do it again this year with Mitch White. And it, like, the misnomer of a lot of spring trainings is that players are actually competing for spots on the team. It's very seldom the case that there are actually true competitions. I think that most GMs and managers could sit down right now and look at the roster resource page and tell you exactly who their opening day roster is going to be.
Yeah.
On like the like today, first day of spring training, they could tell you exactly what their roster is going to be on March 28th, because they're just going to do whatever preserves flexibility and keeps as much talent in their organization. Like, I think that most teams have like 24, 25 dudes who are just assured spots on the team. And like, maybe there's some variability in that 26th spot. Maybe somebody could push their way into the back end of a bullpen or the final spot on a bench. And maybe Ben and I are going to spend the entire final week of spring training talking about who that's going to be, like we did last year when we talked a lot about Nathan Lucas and Otto Lopez in that competition, quote unquote, for the 13th position player spot. Guess what happened there? Nathan Lucas won it. He was this great story that we all told. Everybody in the organization was praising him and what he'd done to get there. He didn't even get a plate appearance before he was optioned. in mid-April.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Otto Lopez, who was like robbed of this spot, who was so good at the WBC, he was like so useful for that roster, such a better fit, the organizational guy who had been building his way up the ranks, like how could they do it to this guy? He went to Buffalo, OPS like 460, and got designated for assignment last week. Now he's a San Francisco Giant.
So, Ghost K. Cato a couple years ago before that.
Yeah, I just think we waste so much energy and breath and time and effort on talking about these little minuscule edge of roster things, these marginal items and topics that really, in the grand scheme of things, never end up mattering.
Spring is for the pitchers, and realistically, you can't compress it. You need to have reps. You need to give yourself rest in between. So pitchers need 4, 5, 6 weeks to get ready for the grind of a season. And so that means that everyone has to be there. And, you know, there's the business of spring as well. But essentially, it's for the pitchers and for everyone else. It's a matter of not getting hurt and not getting into trouble, not saying or doing anything that is going to impact you later in the season. It's really that simple to me. And it's an amazing time of year for so many reasons. I love being down there. It's a really cool way to watch baseball in a really intimate setting. But end of the day, it's more about avoiding bad things than it is creating good things.
100%. And that is why, and this is another like spring misconception that I'd like to dispel right now, that is why like nobody should make a big deal out of the fact that George Springer, Justin Turner, Kevin Kiermaier, although he might be a bit of an exception, we'll see, likely aren't going to show up in games until like 2 weeks in to camp, really, to games having been played, or yeah, like just aren't going to be. Maybe they'll like play once or twice in the first week and then not again. And people are going to say, are these guys hurt? Are they hiding something?
They'll play in a home game.
Games? Yeah, these guys aren't going to Fort Myers. These guys aren't going to Lakeland. You're going to hear a lot about them hitting in minor league games or taking live BPs on the backfield. Like Blue Jays PR is going to be telling us, oh, yeah, like George Springer went 3-for-6 off of, I don't know, Wes Parsons on a backfield today, right? And like none of us saw it. We're just going to take all those stats at face value. It's a live BP. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a double. Yeah, sure, right? Like that was a triple. Guy didn't even leave the box. This is just a much more efficient way for these veteran players to like get the work that they need. It exposes them to less injury risk. It lessens their workloads. It just helps them conserve as much fuel as possible for the regular season, which is something that is imperative for, you know, a veteran team like the Blue Jays when you've got 34-year-olds like George Springer and 39-year-olds like Justin Turner. Like this applies to the pitching staff as well. Like if, you know, Kevin Gausman or Chris Bassitt have a bit more of a deliberate ramp up, if one of those guys goes out and gets shelled, remember, you mentioned it. Remember last year, Jose Berríos' first spring outing? I remember this. This was against the Phillies in Dunedin. It went like Trey Turner single, Kyle Schwarber nuke, Brandon Marsh like smoked one to the wall. Rhys Hoskins had a first pitch single, and then Berríos goes off to the WBC and gets absolutely shelled pitching for Puerto Rico, and everyone's melting down. Right? Remember, we're coming off of 2022. People are apoplectic. This guy is broken. What happened to him? How could this be? The Blue Jays are screwed. Well, the regular season comes around and Berríos has like a 3.5 ERA over nearly 200 innings pitched. Same thing with Chris Bassitt last year. He comes out early in the spring and he's like high 80s. The velo is down. He's telling anyone who will listen, don't worry, don't freak out. I'm not trying to peak in March. I'm trying to peak in September, October. No one's listening. They're saying Chris Bassitt is like cooked. The Blue Jays like gave this veteran all this money and they never should have done it. And they made this big mistake. He goes out, throws 200 innings of 3.5 ERA ball. Ignore that stuff. Don't overreact to spring results, to spring playing time, to spring performance. Just don't worry about any of that stuff, particularly when you're dealing with veterans like the Blue Jays have.
Yeah. And even when you have a young player performing really well, just try to keep that in context too. I mean, Rowdy Tellez has gone on to have a solid major league career. So, you know, he was a major leaguer in the making at this point in time. But I remember this was probably 2017, 2018, around the time that Tellez was coming up. And there was so much hype around him and what he could potentially be for this team. because he was crushing it all spring. And end of the day, he was a major league player. So it's not that the hype was totally unjustified, but you just want to remember, like, if maybe it is, you know, Nathan Lucas or an Addison Barger might have a monster spring this year. And that would be great for the Blue Jays if he does. And he's probably going to play in the majors either way. But doesn't mean if he goes out and hits 9 homers this spring, it doesn't mean that he's ready for everyday third base duty on opening day.
You know, it's going to be Aurelvis because like weather's warm. He's got a ton of pop. You know, he's obviously like trying to prove something in camp. He's a guy who can easily run into like a few cookies from maybe even big league pitchers on the other side who are just trying to get the ball over the plate, just trying to like feel something for the mound. And he could totally just like nuke a few early in spring and have everyone saying Aurelvis Martinez needs to be on this team right now on opening day.
Yeah. And look, like, I'd be open to that, honestly. If I was the Blue Jays, you don't go in there assuming he's going to make it, but yeah, you'd be open to it. But hey, if he struggles for 2 weeks and, you know, it's not there, then you probably send him down. And more likely than that, just knowing how the Blue Jays think about development and knowing how they think about even what it means to debut in the major leagues, they more likely send him to Buffalo for a couple weeks. And then mid-season, something comes up and it's 3 weeks into the season and boom, he's there. So, you know, breaking camp with the major league team does come with a little bit more pressure.
Final one I'll identify, and just because you're like already seeing it rampant, it's the so-and-so's looking jacked, so-and-so's lost weight, so-and-so's in incredible shape, so-and-so's conditioning, this and that. Yes, of course these players are in better shape than they were the last time you saw them, which was at the end of a six-month marathon in which they pushed their limits both physically and mentally just to get through to the end of the season. Like, every player should be more muscular, trimmer, you know, leaner, more mentally sound than they were when they finished 2023. A lot of players actually try to come into the season with weight to lose because they know that throughout the grind of an MLB season, like, they're just going to be fighting against that deterioration as they get into the regular travel and the lack of sleep and the stress every night and the poor eating habits and the change in time zones and the stress and the toll on their bodies every night. Like, no player is gaining muscle during the grind of a baseball season. Like, a baseball season is a highly catabolic environment. You are only going to lose. For a lot of guys, halfway through the season, like, the priority is just like keep as much as you can and survive until the end. Like, just get yourself ready to perform that night, you know? Like, there's a big difference between like being well enough to perform and like being in your healthiest, best shape for health. You know, in order to like to gain muscle or to, you know, preserve muscle, like, you need a low stress environment. You got to be like prioritizing your rest and your sleep. And like, you can't have your friggin' sympathetic nervous system being like lit up every night because you're playing 2.5 hours of, you know, high stress baseball in front of 40,000 people. Like, you know, you're not sleeping, you're getting on planes, you're switching time zones, your circadian rhythm's all messed up. Like, you're just stressed out, your cortisol's all over the place. Like, it's just not a good environment to be looking your best. So yes, visually, a lot of players are going to appear to be in much better shape right now than they were at the end of last season. That's because they're standing on like the starters. Like, Courtney Dowalter, like, standing at the beginning of the ultra marathon. They're about to run 100 miles. They're going to look a lot different at the end of it.
It's a long season, right? It's a super long season. And I would venture to say that the 50-50 ticket sellers are in better shape now. And the grounds crew and maybe the writers. I don't know. Like, it's a long, long season. I think that the elevator attendants, everyone around the team, it's just, it takes a toll. I'm sure fans know this. Like, your schedule, anyone listening to this, your schedule, if you're this much of a fan, you know, that you're listening to ATL in February, you live and die with the Blue Jays. And probably your schedule is very, very different in the summertime when they play every single day for 3 hours than it is in the winter when maybe you watch Netflix or whatever the case. Like, it's a it just the baseball schedule is unlike anything else, and it has a physical impact on these guys.
And if anything, like, I would say that an excessively low body fat percentage would actually be a disadvantage for a ball player at the beginning of a season. I don't think that's what you want.
No, you don't want it. No, I agree with that. I agree, because then you lose, once you start losing weight, you're losing muscle.
Yeah, you got nothing to lose. If anything, like, excessively low body fat, that's just going to hinder your endurance, your energy. You're not going to be feeling your best every day. You're not going to be able to perform your best.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, baseball players are not bodybuilders. Like, you're not preparing.
You don't say.
Well, but that's the thing. Like, a lot of people expect them to look a certain way. Like, and this is across all sports, but it's a weird thing in baseball where people really expect ball players to, like, conform to this aesthetic ideal of, like, what a professional athlete should look like. And, you know, it's 2024 and we've seen enough baseball by now to know that there is, like, a wide range of body types that can thrive at the highest level of this sport. Like, we've watched enough baseball to know, like, there's no physical standard by which you are being judged as if you're, like, stepping on stage at the Olympia, or with which you need to excel at this game, right? Like, appearance really doesn't tell us anything about function. Body composition does not reflect athleticism. Strength, coordination, stamina, like, these things are all important, but I really don't think any of us can assess a player's athleticism and a player's possession of those traits merely by looking at them running around a backfield in spring training.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think there are sort of, like, thresholds past which you sort of say, okay, maybe this isn't helping. For sure. I think that can happen. But I think there are also instances where, you know, to go back to my guy, Patrick Mahomes, shout out to his Super Bowl win, you heard it here first on ATL. But, you know, there was a photo circulating of him where, you know, he had his shirt off and it wasn't like your Adonis physique, whatever. It's functional. It works for him. So who cares? It works incredibly well for him. So that can be the case with ball players too.
One of my favorite rugby players to watch is Finn Russell. He's the fly half for Scotland. And this guy is just, like, an absolute maestro on the pitch. Like, he just does things that nobody is expecting. He is, like, so decisive and so creative. He's got that, like, Mahomes dad bod going on. Like, they did a, like, one of those Netflix, like, advertise the sport series for last year's Six Nations, which is awesome, by the way. And you see Finn Russell with his shirt off in the locker room. And it's like, this guy is one of the best fly halves, like, in international rugby. Like, yeah, he is, because he possesses all those athletic traits and all the things that make him great at the highest level. And you wouldn't know it by looking at him. Like, this is why teams, like, don't rely on the eye test when it comes to athletes. Like, this is why they have, like, objective measures, performance-based metrics and strength tests and agility measures. Like, this is why right now in Dunedin, like, players are establishing baselines in the gym and in the trainer's room for their strength, for their flexibility. You know, they're establishing baselines for, like, rest metrics. You know, there's all kinds of information and data and biofeedback that can be gathered throughout the season and then measured against what your baseline was coming off the offseason and spring training to tell the club, like, how prepared you are to compete that night. Like, this is stuff that informs playing time decisions. It informs training workload off the field, because, like, throughout the course of a baseball season, you're naturally going to wear down. You're naturally going to push your physical limits. It's demanding. It's relentless. Like, that is just the design of the sport. But teams can help athletes avoid overtraining. They can help them avoid burning out mentally, accumulating excessive fatigue, all these things that lead directly to injuries. Like, teams can help players stay on the field and, you know, perform at their best over the long run by assessing a lot of these objective metrics and just relying on a lot of this feedback that is, like, measurable. Not just, oh, so-and-so looks tired. Oh, so-and-so looks out of shape. Oh, so-and-so looks athletic. I really don't think that, like, any of us can tell anything about a player's athleticism or readiness to compete just by looking at them.
Yeah, I think you know, to have the objective information is so helpful. And it's, you know, you think about, just how useful that is. And it's like, this is why sports analytics are great. This is why we want them. And this is why they help make better decisions and keep athletes on the field. And of course, like, I think, you know, you can watch Alejandro Kirk and you can tell he's not a fast base runner, but I'd rather have a baseline. I'd rather have an objective baseline on that and understand, you know, relative to himself, how is he moving relative to his historic norms. Same with a really fast base runner, like, you know, let's say it's a Whit Merrifield, or, you know, not that he was necessarily that fast, but historically he has been. You want to understand them relative to themselves. So those things are super useful. Yeah, not to make this about analytics, but analytics are awesome. So keep them coming.
Any last spring misconceptions you want to clear up?
That's it. Over here anyway. Excited for spring training to be back. Hopefully there's some better times ahead for Jays fans.
Oh, there's always good times ahead. Well, this is the thing with baseball, man. It's going to surprise you. Like, you know, go back and look at what we were talking about last year and what we were saying and what people were saying and what the general tenor was. Like, your, I don't even know what to call it, nightmare scenario, I guess, where the Blue Jays, like, average 6 runs a game, but their pitching absolutely falls apart.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, maybe that should be the expectation. Because in baseball, it's like, expect the unexpected. I said this last week, who at this time last year saw the Rangers and Diamondbacks playing for the World Series? It was like the Mets and Padres are going to contend for the pennant. You know, the Yankees are obviously going to win the American League East. You know, like, Jose Berrios and Yusei Kikuchi might be cooked. Alek Manoah is obviously going to contend for a Cy Young Award. I mean, all these things that we say during spring training, all this stuff that we forecast and predict, so much of it ends up just being bunk.
Yeah.
Completely inaccurate. None of us actually know what's going to happen. All I know is that many things will happen that run in direct opposition, completely counter to what a lot of people are saying today.
That's for sure. And honestly, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be great. It's nice to have baseball back. And yeah, thanks to everyone for sticking with us.
He's Ben Nicholson Smith. I am Arden Zwelling. Our producers are Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. Spring training has begun. Athletics will be with you throughout, and then throughout the regular season as well. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. This has been At the Letters.